Hello, and welcome to the Heathrow results for the 12 months to 31st of December 2017. Throughout the call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there'll be a question and answer session. Please note that this is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present John Holland-Kay, Chief Executive Officer, Javier Echeverri, Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead.
Great. Well, thank you and welcome. And I'd also like to introduce Sally Ding, our Assistant Treasurer, who is with us today. I'd just like to run through the operational highlights. The financial performance will be covered by Javier. I'll come back on the strategic agenda, and then we'll open up to any questions. And any difficult ones we'll send over Sally's way. And just to remind those viewing remotely that you can see the presentation through the link on the invitation or directly on our website. So if we move on to slide three, this has been a record year for Heathrow on many fronts. Excellent service standards, and you'll see on all the measures that we focus on a really great improvement. For the third time running, I think, rated by Skytrax the best major airport in Europe. A really good recommendation, particularly given that we were busier than ever before with 78 million passengers. Up 3% year on year. So really strong growth, I think the fastest growth we've had for over 5 years. And then financially, what we've seen is record levels of profitability, looking at EBITDA, up just under 5%, and that's in spite of our prices coming down by about 2%. And what's happening there is that the combination of more passengers choosing to use Heathrow, spending more while they're in the airport, and with good cost control, with costs coming down just over 3% per passenger, but also coming down in absolute terms for the third year running, showing really good financial discipline. And, of course, we've been out in the market and very grateful for your support in raising over £1 billion in debt financing while simplifying our capital structure. And from a strategic point of view, I've talked before about our vision of giving passengers the best airport service in the world, but in simple terms, we're giving better service at lower cost, and while keeping the airport resilient, and you'll see that coming through. Very good momentum with expansion. I'll talk a little bit about that more in a moment or two. But I think really the tone has changed in the last few months from people wondering when this is going to happen, if it's going to happen, to wondering when it is going to happen. So we're really getting on with things. So if you look at on slide four, where is the traffic coming from? Well, it's pretty much where you would expect it to be. A lot of it is that long-haul connectivity that Heathrow uniquely provides. Big growth in Asia-Pacific, but also Latin America. So new services to those markets, but also fuller planes to those markets, reflecting where the growth is now coming from and why it is so important that we get on and expand Heathrow so we can have more flights to those kind of markets. But one other thing I want to pull out is that if you look at the United Kingdom, that is also one of our fastest growing markets. And that's because of better load factors and new services to domestic markets. So up until a few years ago, we'd seen a decline in the number of domestic markets served. Now we've started to see that being reversed with more services going up to Inverness through British Airways, but also more competition and choice coming in with Flybe coming in to compete against British Airways on Aberdeen and Edinburgh. And that's been a real benefit with prices coming down for those customers. And we've been underpinning that growth by reducing our charges, which have come down by more than a half for domestic passengers in the last 18 months. So we're doing what we need to do to support the UK economy. Now, one other thing I'd point out is the growth in cargo volumes, up over 10% over the last year. Really significant growth. And a lot of that is going to North America, our traditional trading market, and the Middle East. And the picture there, I think, is that we have a lot more British exporters getting out, taking advantage of exchange rates to go out and sell their wares, and that's starting to come through in the 18 months or so since the Brexit vote. Now, one thing that we shouldn't overlook is that while Heathrow has been doing well, we've still been falling behind. Heathrow, as we know, only has two runways where our competitors have been investing in new capacity, and they have double the rates of growth that we have. And it won't be long, probably less than 5 years, before we see not only Charles de Gaulle overtaking Heathrow in terms of passenger numbers, but also Frankfurt and Amsterdam. you know, a country the size of Holland overtaking the United Kingdom with more flights to its hub airport. That is a real sign that we have a burning platform to get on and expand Heathrow as we come to our Brexit period. And if you look at international standings, 10 years ago, we were the third biggest airport in the world. Even 5 years ago, we were. But now we're down to seven, and it won't be long before we are fighting to keep in the top 10. This is why we need to get on and protect Britain's place as one of the great trading nations. But also, you can see the huge opportunity we have. We heard earlier with the Transport Select Committee, airlines talking about if Heathrow doesn't expand, we'll be going to other European hubs. Well, the same can happen in reverse. As Heathrow expands with a much stronger market in London than either Amsterdam or Frankfurt, and really from Paris, we should be able to win back a lot of that custom that we have been losing. Now, I talked about service earlier, and we've been showing the same set of metrics that we look at our performance on, and you'll see steady progress on all of them. Consistent growth in customer satisfaction. We're now solidly in the top quartile among European airports, as judged by passengers, and actually, against our comparator group, we're consistently the second highest. So really good performance there. And even where we've had areas of weakness over the last couple of years around how we serve passengers with reduced mobility, some of our most vulnerable passengers, we've started to turn that around and see real improvements in the service that they received. Departures punctuality at 80%. Is now best in class within Europe among major hub airports. So really good work by our teams to improve that. And you can see in terms of baggage, another area which historically we've had an issue or two on, this is now best in class among the European hubs with 10 per 1,000 baggage misconnects. And we're working hard to get that down into single digits. So really good operational performance supporting good passenger satisfaction. Now, one of the things we launched last year was Heathrow 2.0, which is our plan to make Heathrow a center of excellence for sustainable aviation. And given the focus that we have on Heathrow, and you'll be familiar with questions people ask about climate change, around air quality and noise, it's absolutely right that we should be at the forefront of driving a change on those kind of areas. So we set out last year our strategy for doing that, and we started to deliver against that. So two things I would call out on that. First of all, that this year we're very proud to become a London Living Wage employer. That means that we won't just be providing jobs for local communities, but good paying jobs. And that will benefit over 3,000 people at Heathrow over the next couple of years as we phase that into our contracts. And secondly, one of the big concerns that local communities have had is over flights at night. And we've been working hard with good collaboration with the airlines to reduce late running flights. And they've fallen by around a third over the last 12 months. A really significant improvement that is benefiting our local communities and showing that we are being a good neighbor. Now, in terms of expansion, I've shown this slide before, just in terms of the steps that we are going to be going through over the next few years. And we are still on track for a planning consent in 2021. And we've been taking steps to make sure we stay on that timetable, even though some of the other factors have been affected by things like the UK general election. So where we are at the moment is that the Transport Select Committee are going through the scrutiny of the government's draft national policy statement, and that should be going to a vote in Parliament before the summer recess, so June, July of this year. We have started our planning process. We started our public consultation last month. We're more than halfway through that now, with 27 out of 40 public consultation meetings having been held. They've gone really well. We've had good engagement, lots of good suggestions. And that puts us on course to come up with a single master plan towards the end of this year. We'll then be consulting on that in the first half of next year. And that will lead to a development consent order application in the beginning of 2020. So we're bang on track for delivering what we set out to do, with the opportunity to open the new runway at the end of 2025 or in 2026. So we are getting on with it. And just to give you a little bit more detail behind that, We've been working closely with the airlines since the government backed Heathrow expansion in October 2016. And as a result of that, we've come up with better options for improving passenger service, airfield efficiency, but also reducing costs. And one big element of this is an option to not build a new terminal at all, but to expand the existing terminals instead. And that's a lower cost way of development. It's much more phased, so it smooths the funding, and it also helps with affordability. And as a result of that, we believe that we can reduce the capital costs by about £2.5 billion with some of those changes. Now, this is probably the only big infrastructure project that has ever proposed to reduce capital costs, but I think it's a good sign that we've been working well with our airlines to make this more efficient while meeting all of our other commitments. I've touched a little bit on the first planning consultation. I should mention we're also consulting on changes to airspace, and that is fundamental. We can't have more capacity on the ground without having more capacity in the air. And this is the first time a big airspace change has been consulted on ever, and it will be the first big airspace change for over 40 years. So this is a really important thing to be getting on with. And again, it's something that's been welcomed by a lot of local groups who just want to see how we can reduce the noise on the ground. And then I've touched on the national policy statement. We're very encouraged by the cross-party support that we have with strong support from MPs in all the four out of the five largest parties in the UK, good cross-section of MPs, and we're confident that when this comes to a vote that we will get the backing of Parliament with over 70% of MPs supporting Heathrow expansion. So a good position to be in. Perhaps from a financial point of view, the regulatory settlement is perhaps more important. Part of my job is to make sure that this isn't just affordable and sustainable, it's also got to be financeable. And we'll be putting a lot more focus behind the financing plan over the course of this year. And much as I've been pushed to make guarantees about prices and costs, you will all know that that is just not the right thing to do at this stage. We've got a lot more work to do before we can start to get into any price negotiation like that. The CAA has made some good progress on that. They have confirmed that the Q6 period will be extended for a further year up until the end of 2020, possibly longer. They have proposed an RPI minus zero price path, which again is encouraging. And there's some good sign that they have been listening around some of the things that we have been proposing. The cost of indexation they're proposing will be for new debt only. They're proposing to maintain the core inflation index as RPI at least until 2025. And what we're looking for now is confirmation on some of the Category C costs, the construction costs, so that we know how those will be treated, because increasingly we will have to start getting on with some of the early delivery of the project. I think one area of disappointment is the preliminary work that PwC has done on behalf of the CAA around the price of regulatory risk that goes with expansion. We are very disappointed with that work. We'll be pointing that out quite fully to the CAA because we think that treating an expanded airport like a water company with a little bit added on is completely inappropriate for a project of this scale and this complexity. So there is now a timetable for the CAA to get on with that, and we'll have the initial proposals for H7 regulation in late 2019. And what we've offered to the airlines is that if they would like, and I think there was some appetite for this, we're happy to consider a more commercial settlement than the traditional regulatory settlement, and that's something that we will be discussing with them towards the end of this year when we have a single master plan. So at that point, I will hand over to the fabulous Javier to take us through the financial numbers. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. So thank you, John, and hello all. I will now run you through our key financial highlights, starting from slide 12 in your packs. So we saw a very positive performance in 2017. Our financial performance was strong with adjusted EBITDA up 4.6% year-on-year, which is slightly above our latest outlook published last December. Revenue grew 2.7% due to a better value for money proposition to customers, and primarily driven by a combination of more passengers enjoying better service and more resilient operational performance, as well as those passengers choosing to spend more in retail and services offer. Moving on the cost side, our cost efficiency program continued to deliver strongly over the year, as we also achieved a 3.1% year-on-year reduction in costs on a per-passenger basis. Obviously critical for this community when looking at the robustness of our balance sheet position. Our regulatory asset base grew by reinvesting in our facilities, as well as acceleration in 2017, primarily driven by a higher inflationary environment. In terms of net debt, we deliver what we said. Always very difficult to say, much more difficult to deliver. But the relative movements in Heathrow SP and Heathrow Finance, which are the primarily two entities issuing our debt portfolio, reflects our work and strong position in global debt capital markets and the simplification in our capital structure as we look to combine the fourth layer at ADI Finance 2 Limited into Heathrow Finance by no later than September 2019. I will now give you some color on our revenue performance on slide 13. As you know, approximately 60% of our revenue comes from aeronautical income, and our results demonstrate the third successive year of delivering better value for passengers, with average aeronautical income per passenger down 2.0% compared to 2016. Overall, aeronautical revenue was up 1%, driven by the combination of two things. First of all, strong traffic growth, as John described, partially offset by the combination of our 1.5% real reduction in and yield dilution. We enjoy a very strong momentum in retail income with more passengers, greater participation, and higher spend per participating passengers. And overall, our retail income in 2017 was up £47 million, which means a strong 7.7% growth. Obviously, sterling depreciation continues helping, but this is coupled with strong management action to contribute to our retail performance, particularly in duty and tax-free and airside specialist shops. In 2017, we saw the monetization of management initiatives previously done, especially the effort done by the development and commercial team in the Terminal 4 luxury stores, which was completed in 2017, whilst under the catering category, we saw a great performance driven by the redevelopment of Terminal 5 food outlets and our new in-flight food and beverage initiatives, as well as increasing passenger participation overall. Within other income, which is our third revenue line in the slide, I want to call out the strong performance of Heathrow Express, where revenues were up almost 6%, driven by strong traffic growth of 7% in the year and a much more effective pricing strategy. It's worthwhile to remember that given the regulatory single deal form that Heathrow operates under, the larger the commercial value that we can generate in our premium retail space, the lower the charges to our airlines and passenger customers. Moving on to slide 14, we also had a robust performance on the cost side. As you well know, we had an ambitious program of cost efficiencies at the start of the current regulatory period, and we are on track to deliver £600 million cumulative savings by the end of 2018. Overall, our operating cost decline in the context of record traffic and record passenger service standards. This reduction is equivalent to 3.1% on a per passenger basis in a year when inflation was up 4%, which means that costs were down more than 7% in real terms. Moving into the different components, in terms of employment costs, remain flat in the year, reflecting the combined effect of two movements. First of all, on the one hand, the non-repeat of 2016 organizational change costs and other people-related efficiencies, and on the other side, higher costs in the year to manage higher passenger numbers, a pay rise that we took effect in July, as well as the cost of voluntary severance schemes across various operational areas that we will help us to enable future efficiencies in the years to come. Moving to operational costs, the benefits from various contract renegotiations, including the renegotiated air traffic control contract and lower insurance claims, drove costs down by almost 5%. Finally, it's worth flagging higher utility costs, which reflects the one-off benefit in 2016 of a significant accounting credit related to the renegotiation of the infrastructure contract for the provision of electricity distribution, which will unwind in the next few years. In terms of next steps on cost initiatives in 2018, our initiatives will continue focusing on securing further efficiencies, particularly focusing on improving supplier contract terms, reducing energy consumption, and further implementation of organizational effectiveness activities. Slide 15 reflects how the strength of our results is crystallized in cash generation, with over £1.7 billion of cash from operations in the big green bar that you can see in the chart, which is 5% up compared to last year. This was sufficient to cover our capital investment in the year, external cash interest costs, debt accretion and inflation-linked accretion, and part of the dividends paid to our ultimate shareholders. Capital expenditure in the year was £687 million, the majority of which was focused on asset replacement activities and investments to improve passenger experience and airport resilience across our operation. It's worth flagging that within the £687 million, £80 million was related to expansion. And as indicated in our investor report published last December, we expect that number will double during 2018 as we transition into planning permission phase within the delivery program of expansion. Net restricted payments of £686 million covers primarily two things. First of all, intra-group financing movements between Heathrow SP, Heathrow Finance and AVI Finance 2, as well as £525 million in dividends paid to our ultimate shareholders. In terms of dividends, it's worthwhile to mention that the dividend payout in 2017 reflects the strong performance we experienced in 2017 and is aligned with the mature profile of our infrastructure business. Taking into account all the other flows in the period, as you can see on the right-hand side of the chart, net debt increased at the end of the year by over £450 million to a total of £12.4 billion. Turning to our gearing position in slide 16, the chart illustrates the robustness, again, of our balance sheet in terms of gearing. As you may remember, our Class A and B gearing ratios increased in the first half of 2017 as a result of our initiatives to minimize our interest charge by temporarily using Class A and B debt to repay loan facilities at Heathrow Finance and AVI Finance 2 Limited. As anticipated previously, we have unwound those initiatives, and as you can see, that's reflected in the decline of our Class A and B gearing ratios in the second half of the year. It's worth reminding the credit community that the leverage trigger event level for Class A debt will move from 70% to 72.5% on April 2018, as per the terms of our financing arrangements. At Heathrow Finance, the current buffer to covenant level is expected to remain at around 2 to 3% of the regulatory asset base compared to our traditional 5% buffer, as we are completing the process of simplifying our capital structure from 4 to 3 layers going forward. The more traditional buffer of 5% will be restored once this transition is completed and the covenant level moves to 92.5% no later than September 2019. Overall, we continue to have very comfortable level to the trigger and covenant leverage levels, and in particular with around 530 million pounds leverage headroom at Hero Finance. Finally, a quick review on slide 17 of what was a year of great successes as we raised over 1 billion in debt globally. Obviously, talking about financing in the recent history of Hero means talking about Andrew Ethyorn. Unfortunately, Andrew is not able to be here with us today. I announced 2 days ago that after 9 years, he will leave us. I just wanted to obviously recognize publicly the fantastic contribution Andrew has done for Hero. Moving into specific achievements in the year, we deliver our target of raising no more than 750 million in Class A debt, and the rest was raised in a Hero Finance format as part of the process to move to a three-layer debt capital structure that I have already mentioned. Key highlights includes becoming one of the fourth U.K. corporate to issue more than 15-year-plus euro-denominated transaction and achieving the lowest coupon in history for an 8-year-plus sterling sub-investment grade bond. Once again, many thanks to all of you and your institutions for the fantastic contribution and your support in our capital market activities. In terms of characteristics of the debt, our current average life of debt stands at 11.4 years, while our liquidity position, taking into account, among other things, over 1.9 billion of undrawn debt and cash resources, extends to September 2019. Overall, we remain very encouraged by the continued strong global support for Hero across multiple markets, and this gives us great confidence in the context of financing expansion. In terms of outlook for 2018, we expect our 2018 debt financing targets to be similar in 2017. As you well know, we operate in under 6 currencies, and we will continue proactively looking at the relative value within the different currencies. Wrapping up, great opportunity for you to wake up before John comes back to the States. Let me highlight and summarize again key highlights of the year. First of all, a strong performance in 2017 that sets us in a good position for 2018 and in the context of expansion. Higher passenger numbers, good cost control, and new retail initiatives have driven 4.6% increase in adjusted EBITDA for the full year. In terms of traffic, obviously, the lifeblood of our airport, traffic growth was exceptional in 2017, and in particular for a severely capacity-constrained airport. The early weeks of 2018 suggest that traffic growth will be more modest and more in line with the 1% forecast that we suggested in our latest investor report published in December. We also expect that our forecast adjusted EBITDA for the year at this stage to be consistent with the 1.8 billion pounds figure published last December. With that, I will now hand over to John to look at some recent developments around our four strategic priorities. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you, Harry. So, we like to be what you like us to be, which is boringly predictable and just keeping on doing what we say we will do. I've spoken before about our vision, but also about our four priorities: Mojo, transform customer service, beat the plan, and sustainable growth. We have to deliver on all of those in order to deliver our overall plan. Let me just touch on some of the things we said we were going to do and what we have coming up next. From a Mojo point of view, I've talked about the Living Wage accreditation. I've mentioned here the Buzz app, and I'm sure you've all got this on your phones. This is an app which allows our frontline colleagues to talk with each other and with their management teams and vice versa. It's a really fantastic way of communicating and has really been positive for communication within our organization. We've also been continuing to do fun things. The five-a-side football was a great fundraiser and good fun. You'll be pleased to know that next year, or this year, we will have the Midnight Marathon coming back again. I look forward to very strong participation from this community, which we're very grateful Also coming up, our Building Together plan is making sure that we learn the lessons and take actions coming out of the strike ballot last year by Unite members. And so we're working hard to make sure that we are giving really good quality facilities and service to our frontline colleagues. Agile working, this is a really important part of our diversity strategy, but also just helping people to have a good work-life balance so that people who need to work more flexible hours can do so and don't all have to be in the office. So that's very exciting. And you wouldn't believe it if you were flying through, but Terminal 5 is 10 years old. Next month is the 10th anniversary, and it's still looking as fresh as when it opened. In fact, it looks better than when it opened because there's no baggage piling up. But Terminal 5, regularly voted the best terminal in the world, really, really proud of that. Transforming customer service, I talked about the work we've been doing with vulnerable passengers. The service signatures, this is setting a common standard so that whoever you work for across Heathrow, you'll give the same kind of service to passengers. So when you're traveling through, you should be able to benefit from that. We'll be rolling that out shortly. I'm sure that when you were traveling through on your Easter skiing holiday, you'll have let your kids play with the Discovered Dinosaurs. And if you miss that, I'm sure you'll get another chance in the summer. But we're doing a lot around the terminals with new facilities for passengers. Some of those come into our Beat the Plan actions. For example, coming up, we will have we'll be finalizing the new extension to the Terminal 3 departure lounge, really much better use of space, much better facilities, more seating. We've got the fantastic new Qantas direct flights to Perth starting next month. That really is transformational, taking use of the new technology. And to be able to fly direct from Heathrow to Australia is just extraordinary. So we're very excited about that. And we've got two new hotels coming up. The Aerotel in Terminal 3 will be the first hotel we've ever had in the central terminal area. Why we've never had one, who knows, but we will have one soon. And Terminal 2, our new hotel, will open later this year as well. So really fabulous service. And for when you're coming to the airport by Heathrow Express, you will be able to go contactless very soon. As we prepare for Crossrail coming in, we'll be moving to common systems with them. So we're very pleased with that. And also that we have agreed with TfL an increase in the Crossrail services that will come to the airport from 4 to 6. So that's a great step forward. Sustainable growth, I've talked quite a lot about the formal steps and about the airspace changes. One thing I should pick out is the work we've been doing with our careers fair, where 6,000 young people from our local schools have come to the airport to meet with some of the organizations that work at the airport. And it's a reminder of just what fantastic opportunities there are, that on one stand, you get to talk to Gordon Ramsay's team, and you get the opportunity to train as a chef with one of the world's best chefs. At the next stand, you're talking to British Airways about becoming a pilot. At the next one, you're talking to the Met Police about a career in the police service, or talking to Heathrow about the fabulous careers we have ourselves. So really a fantastic resource for our local schools, and we're very lucky to have that much talent on our doorstep. Going forward, we've talked a lot about the physical sides and the process sides with expansion, but we're starting to gear up for our supply chain. And Javi and Sally will no doubt talk to you about opportunities from the financing point of view. That's going to be a very exciting prospect. We'll need your help to help deliver this. But we also need to look at the way in which we deliver this physically. As much as possible is going to be built off-site, as much as possible with a UK supply chain. We are kicking off our Business Summit program, which is where we take our Tier 1 contractors all across the UK to meet small and medium-sized businesses to make sure we can let them into our supply chain to benefit from growth and for us to benefit from the skills that they can bring us. But we're also launching our logistics hubs. We had, I think, over 120 initial expressions of interest in logistics hubs. And these are locations where we will build the airport off-site. We're now working with other major projects on this, and I was very pleased to see that in the Chancellor's speech, he made this the standard for government projects from 2020 that they should look to build things off-site, and we are going to be leading that development. So we expect to come down to four final sites being selected, and this will be a legacy of skilled engineering jobs right across the UK. So that's very exciting, and we've just kicked off the process of examining those sites and getting down to a shortlist. So a lot's happening. We are in a very different phase now, and we are getting on with it. So thank you for your time today. Thanks for your support. We're very happy now to open up to any questions, and perhaps we can start here in the room. We have some microphones that just appeared. Well, it may be that we're so boringly predictable that we've answered any questions you might have. Should we just open up and see if there's any questions on the line?
Yes, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're on the phone and you have a question, simply press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad now, and after I announce, you just ask that question. And if you find that question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, just press 0 and 2 to cancel. And there'll be a brief pause while the questions are being registered. Our first question is over to the line of Ludovic Volta at Barclays. Please go ahead.
Ludovic, thank you.
Yes, hi there. This is Thierry Agnew, just on behalf of Ludovic. We have two questions, please. You've guided on deleveraging the junior debt. Can you give us more details on how you intend to do that? And as well, you've discussed in terms of simplifying the capital structure from 4 to 3 layers as well. If you can give us more color on that, please. That's it.
Sure. Sally, do you want to pick that one up?
Sure. We have been working on the capital evolution in the last few years, and we believe this three-layer capital structure is the most efficient way for the company. And therefore, we have been doing some work in the last couple of years to realize that target. And then last year, we finalized the last step in order to achieve the three layers of the capital structure by issuing the 10-year Heathrow Finance bond and a $75 million Filippo loan. We will be finalize that by no later than September 2019.
Great, thank you. Does that cover the question?
Yes, and the leveraging on the junior part of the debt, please.
The leverage on the junior part, as we have been always giving the target to the market, that we will be continue to maintain 5% headroom to the trigger level.
Great.
Thank you.
Answer, thank you.
Hey, going on, our next question is from the line of Alex Hogan of PGIM. Please go ahead, Alex. Your line is open.
Hi, Alex.
Hi there. Just one from me. I was wondering, you say you've got about $1 billion of issuance to do this year. What markets are you looking at? Any in particular, or are you agnostic?
Oh, lots of markets. In fact, we were just talking earlier about which currencies we might want to broaden our portfolio to. But Sally, do you want to respond on that?
Sure, not a problem. As we mentioned earlier, this year their financing scale is around $1 billion. Most of them will be in the Class A format. In terms of currencies, I guess we will continue our strategy that we built up in the last few years, which will be diversify our financing platform and continue to maintain our presence and strong curve in the currencies market that we have had the established presence. So currency rotation, diversification, first consideration. Secondly, obviously, we will look at the relative value to make sure we capture the best of market to us at the right time. 2018 probably is a very interesting year in the financial market with the volatility. Therefore, we will be more agile to the market window and looking into the currencies at the right time.
Maybe now we have a direct flight to Australia than an Aussie dollar. Who knows? Who knows? Thank you, Sally.
Thank you.
Before we go over to Crimes at Insight Investment Research. If anyone else has any further questions, please press 0 and then 1. Robert, please go ahead.
Just wondering how we should think about the 2018 dividend. I mean, I guess I'm kind of asking, was part of the 525 million sterling dividend for last year extraordinary? Do we think of that as a base going forwards, and maybe linked to that? I mean, the business is likely to delever quite a bit over the, let's say, the next 4 or 5 years. What's the kind of the preference of management between paying out dividends, higher dividends, or keeping some capacity back in terms of financing the third runway? Thank you.
As an overall point, before I hand over to Javi, we haven't yet decided on our financing strategy around expansion as regards what level of equity will be put in and when. As we've mentioned previously, we will target to maintain our current credit rating, and that may well require some level of deleveraging, but exactly how we do that, we haven't yet decided. But Javi, I don't know if there's anything else you want to add to that.
Yeah, thank you, John. Obviously, in terms of forecast, we normally provide forecast to the market for the first year, but actually in terms of what's the substance, in terms of dividend policy, we have again been quite boring and unpredictable in the last few years. We normally, among other considerations, one of the critical considerations is to get close to our target gearing, and this is exactly what we have done in this year. Obviously, this year, as you can see, when comparing our latest performance with the original investor report that we put together back in 2016, we have seen a significant operational outperformance of around £100 million, which we consider in conversation with the board that was worthwhile to distribute to the ultimate investors. So again, normally dividend policy is driven by target gearing, and we don't anticipate to change indication of target gearing for the future.
Okay, thanks. Just one final question from my side. The PwC report, I thought, was suggesting quite low returns for the third runway. I'm just wondering if you actually judge the returns to be too low. Under the license, are you effectively obligated to build the third runway, even if you don't think the returns are attractive? Thanks.
Sorry, it's a simple answer.
Okay.
Great. And Rob, any other questions from you?
Nope, that's fine. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay, as that was the final questions on the phone, back to you.
Great. Well, thank you. Shall I just check in the room? Any other questions? No? Just someone scratching their head. Excellent. Well, look, really, thank you for being with us today and for taking the time to dial in. We really appreciate the support that you have given us over the year. We are going to need a lot more support over the coming years as we not only plan for continuing the success of the business, but also the expansion of the business, and from a financial point of view, pretty much doubling. So although we're very pleased with the reduction in the capital costs for expansion with the options we've come up with, I'm sure there are those in the credit community who see that as being a missed opportunity. But there'll still be plenty of fundraising we'll need to do, which we'll need your support for. So thank you very much for that, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.